Interlude, Coruscant. Coruscant is in chaos, and Mos Amida is trapped. He's a prisoner of his own empire. Those few remaining here in the impenetrable Imperial Palace are keeping him to his quarters. He has not left in months. Those present are loyal not to him, no, they belong to another, to Gallius Rax, the true keeper of the Empire's fate and fortunes. Rax sent him a handwritten letter, a rare thing to see, something only Palpatine himself was known to do from time to time, when this all began. It said quite simply, "Glorious leader of the Empire, I have taken Jakku. I have brought the Empire with me. You are still its leader in name, but you will be confined to your quarters until it's all over. Do not try to leave. The doors are sealed, even the ones to the balcony, in case you entertain the idea of jumping. And any attempt to escape will be met with reciprocal violence meant to hobble you. I assure you, this is to keep you safe so that you may lead us again one day. With great honor and respect, Counselor Gallius Rax." What a pompous gas bladder. Rax was making no joke when he said he would hobble Amida given any escape attempt. Just days into his cozy imprisonment, he tried to assault the two guards outside his door. He broke a plate across one's head, threw a clumsy, telegraphed fist at the other. They handily dispatched him. Before he knew what was happening, a boot connected with his knee, and he went down on the floor. One grabbed that leg and gave it a twist. The tendons tweaked, and he couldn't walk for days. Even now it gives him some trouble, with lightning whips of pain going up from his heel and into his hips. Woe and misery. They bring him food, good food, not victuals fit for an emperor, no, but it's not gruel either. Most days he's alone, the exception being when they bring him those meals. He wondered at first why they didn't just kill him. Why would Rax want him around? Then they showed him. Blaster pressing hard against the back of his head, a band of ISB agents forced him to record a holovid, thanking the troops for their service, thanking Gallius Rax for his military leadership, and assuring the Empire that victory would soon be theirs. They force him to do this from time to time, once every month or so. It is soul-crushing. He'd rather die. Though sometimes, that desire to find death is supplanted by something else. A parade of fantasies where he wraps his fingers around the neck of Gallius Rax and crushes the man's windpipe. For a time, he hoped that Sloane was his salvation. They had a common enemy. But Rax found a way to end her. Lured her to Chandrilla where, as the rumor goes, she fell off a sky bridge to her death. And now, Mos Amida has nothing and no one. He looks around his quarters. It is filthy. He has not washed himself in days. The room's practically a midden heap at this point. Even his clothes are dirty. He would send them down the laundry vacuum tube, but that stopped working days ago. Instead, he sits. He makes tea. He stares at the wall. Inside this room, all is quiet and serene. Outside in the city, madness has taken hold. He can see it from his windows when he chooses to look. Once in a while, an explosion will bloom in the distance. Any time he opens the blinds, he can spy wreckage, usually Imperial. An ISB speeder or ship sometimes crashed into the ground, sometimes into a rooftop. When they bring him food, he asks questions. What is happening? Who is out there? Are we safe? The only answer he gets is that he can be assured that the Imperial Palace is impenetrable. Then the guard will say something along the lines of, "The city is fine and remains under ISB control." Which is a lie so obvious it's like an ugly nose. Everyone can see it, even the one who wears it. This is the best that Moss can figure. They have lost Coruscant. Given that he has not seen the New Republic ships, he wonders to whom it has been lost. Is there still an Imperial blockade in space? Or has the criminal underworld finally ruptured like a straining boil? Have the inmates taken over the asylum? He always warned Palpatine that curating such a close connection to the underworld and keeping them so near was a dangerous gambit. Mos Amida is a creature of law and order, a man of numbers, a man of rules. Cozying up to scum like that always bristled him. Though he never said much in objection, did he? The Emperor had his design. He did not brook dissent. He did not brook something so disagreeable as a dubious glance. Palpatine only accepted advice when it was asked for, and never before. The Empire. What a grand and malignant failure. A pile of waste. And Mos Amida is seated precisely at its pinnacle. He wants to weep, but he has nothing left. He sleeps for a time. Then, a noise. It must be mealtime once again for the prisoner. No, this sound is coming from the laundry vacuum tube? It's faint, the sound. A thumping here, the straining of thin metal there. A faint susurrus following. Ah, someone is at last repairing the damnable vacuum tube. Well, at least he'll be able to get his clothes clean once again. If he cares enough to bother. And maybe he doesn't. With that mystery solved, Amida again drifts off to sleep. That is, until another noise startles him awake. This time, when his eyes pop open, he discovers with bowel-clenching shock that he is not alone. He is, in fact, surrounded. Filthy urchin children form a half-circle around his chaise, and their presence confirms for him what he has long feared. His mind has been well and truly lost, and he is now enthralled to a very vivid hallucinogenic life. At the fore of this vivid delusion is a soot-cheeked red-headed boy, his lip cleft by a fishhook scar, giving him a natural sneer. Naturally, the child has a blaster. They all do.
"Go on, do it,"
Amida says drearily. The boy seems taken aback by this. He shares looks with the other five children. A girl with dark braids forming a crown on her head makes a sour face.
"You want to die?"
she asks.
"Iggs, you hear this bugger?"
The sneering boy, Iggs apparently, lifts the blaster.
"Well, Nance, I suppose we oblige this leech and send him on to the next life."
He lifts the blaster, and it's then that Mos Amida begins to cry. The tears are not tears of fear, or hate, or rage. They are the blubbering, plaintive cries of a man set on the edge, but never allowed to come away from it, nor allowed to leap over its precipice. Here, finally, a release awaits. Even if this release is the dream of a sleeping mind, or the vision from a broken one. The blaster barrel, like a black eye, stares at him. One of the other children, a bug-eyed, angry boy, twists the mouth that sits in the center of his bulbous forehead and says to Iggs,
"I don't think this is gonna work, Iggsy."
"Ah, Criffit. I think you're right, Irk," the towhead says. He lowers the blaster. Amida shakes his head.
"No, it'll work. Just do it. Please."
He paws at the weapon, but the boy pulls it away in a taunting gesture.
"What am I missing?"
Nans asks.
"Let's axe the monster before anybody hears us. We have to get back out, you know."
"Look at him," Iggs says. "He's not who we thought. This blue bucket of flab couldn't lead a fly to a stack of dung, much less the whole of the Empire. We pop him, we probably do him and the rest of the bucketheads a favor."
but children all looked to one another and seemed to come to the same conclusion with a series of half-shrugs and nods. Amida presses himself further into the comfort of the chaise.
What will you do, then?
Nan says.
I guess we haven't figured that out yet.
Who are the lot of you?
Iggs lifts his chin with pride.
Ankle-biter Brigade. Or part of it.
One by one, they identify themselves.
I'm Iggs,
the red-headed boy says. The girl with the braids?
Nans.
Bug-eyed Angri.
Ark Galarg.
A pair of Bith, who may be twins, or who might just be Bith who look like each other. Mos Amedha has a difficulty differentiating them. Name the other.
She's Huli.
She's Chuchins.
Winchins,
says the last, another human boy.
How'd you get in here?
Amedha asks them. The angry Urk says,
Laundry tube. We broke it. Climbed up. Big enough for a kid to get through.
How foolishly simple,
Amedha thinks. And then comes the mad irony that Imperial engineers and architects were very good at creating very narrow and very vulnerable spaces in their designs. He begins to wonder if they had rebel collaborators building in such weaknesses.
Help me escape,
Amedha says.
You must be a real dum-dum, Wenchin says.
Iggs waves it off.
Can't fit you down the vacuum tube.
I can get us executive access to the turbo lift. We just have to clear the hallway. We get to the lift, I can get us out of here. The hallway has three guards. I cannot overpower them as I have no weapons. But you have blasters. Help me escape, and I'll help you.
Again, the children confer silently, raised eyebrows all around. Urk leans in, staring with those big yellow eyes.
What's in it for us?
You're rebels?
Of a sort. We rebel,
Iggs says.
Get me clear. I can turn myself in. I'll give the Republic the codes to open the doors to the Imperial Palace. I'll tell them everything. I'll surrender the whole Empire.
Of course, Mon Mothma did not accept his surrender last time, but these children do not know that. Further, maybe he can offer more this time. Maybe he can do it right.
Please!
It's Iggs that finally nods and says,
Deal.
He couldn't betray us,
Urk says.
He's done for. I figure he tries that, they'll just lock him back in here. Look around. This lump is just a prisoner in his own chambers.
But we could die,
Nans hisses in his ear.
That was always on the table,
the boy says, a surprisingly stoic thing to say given his age. But Amedha fears this child has seen more than most Imperial bureaucrats ever have.
We die. At least we die with our hands free and not tied behind us. Let's get it done.
To Amedha, Iggs says in a low voice,
We're gonna get you out of here. But if you try to twist your way out and mess with us, I'll shove you so far down that laundry chute, you'll wish you were back here sleeping in your own filth again.
Deal,
Amedha says.
Deal. Now let's get you to the Republic.